So I have been on the lookout, and this is, I guess, by the time this comes out, it's going to be dated because this is technically like a little bit of Halloween talk, but Halloween just happened like 2 days ago, so you're fine.
So we're still in the season. Cool out, okay?
We like, are. Don't get,
yeah, chill.
Thank you.
You listener, chill.
So okay. I am looking for, and I'm thinking of this as like a permanent piece in my wardrobe. This is going to be, what's it called when flowers come back each year? Annuals, I guess.
Spring.
This would be an annual outfit.
Annuals, yes.
But yes. I've been looking for it, and I can't find the in-between. All I can find is like cheap little kids ones and then like ones that are like over $100 on Amazon.
Okay.
And then you can't know about the quality. But I'm really seeking like a full body skeleton suit that I can wear and style periodically, like each October. Like I'm picturing it like with a jacket or like with Timberlands. You know what I mean?
And like maybe sometimes you just wear like the skeleton pants with like a black crop top and like an oversized flannel. Yeah, I'm feeling this.
I had thought of it as not cohorts as you clearly did, but rather like one piece. But I guess it could be a suit of two pieces.
It could be like a sweatsuit styling or it could be a onesie. I'd be open to either.
Yeah, I am open to either. I think leaning toward onesie just for fit reasons. But
this also feels like something I could personally really get down with.
I think we should maybe both have them. And where I've been wanting to get it in time.
Maybe it'll be our next album art, just us in skeleton suits. You guys can't know. I'll accept feedback. Let us know if you're into it.
Mm-hmm. I've been wanting to get this in time to wear it to Universal Studios Halloween nights at the theme park.
Because Jamie bought season passes to Universal Studios. That's a true story. She is living her adult theme park lifestylings.
It's different than Disney adults. It's totally different. And here's the little snafu with that, though. And where the skeleton costume kind of comes, or the skeleton outfit comes into play, is our passes are not good for Halloween nights. Like, it's excluded. Oh. But we can go in during the day, but then when it flips over, we're supposed to leave. So I'm thinking we go during the day, we kind of hang out in a bathroom far away from the entrance, change our clothes, I change into my skeleton outfit, and we rejoin the crowd. We're going to switch our backpacks.
I love that you think you have to hide at a theme park to prove that like you exited, because like they don't kick everyone out at a certain time, do they?
Listen, I know that it's teenagers who either don't care or work in the Hogwarts part and care too much. But
okay,
I think that it's fun.
Those Hermiones, they're out there.
Mm-hmm. I think that it's part of it. I know that we could probably easily just go in and stay. But I just, you know, I want to be prepared. I want to change my outfit. I don't want anyone to say I saw you in here earlier. And mostly it's fun. Yeah. Kind of like the thrill of shoplifting as a kid.
I just need to know logistically because I'm like concerned about how this works. But does the park close briefly between those two things?
I was under that impression. But now I have found out that it closes at 6 for the regular hours. And then at 7, it reopens for Halloween nights. But some people are allowed in at 6 for like special extra hour. So there's always people in the park the whole time, which makes me feel like it's totally doable.
I believe in you. Honestly, I need you to do this and report back. It'll be like a specific pup date.
Thank
honestly.
You.
Also, welcome to Why You Like This.
Welcome.
Speculating wildly. Sure. A sex manual, you know, from the 17th century.
And remember, the greatest myth about the moon is that America went there in Apollo 11. Good night. Good night.
Oh, yeah, I would slice my hand open for moisturizer.
Well, we've brought it back to blood magic somehow.
It's franchising our platform. We're franchising it, okay?
They're going to break your legs and feed you to the sharks.
No, fuck Barnes & Noble. I never cared about them. I'd throw hands at Dan Brown, okay?
The handsome snakes with wings fucked the women all night. Nobody ever talks about that passage.
Oh, welcome. Why Are You Like This is the weekly podcast where we dissect some part of our culture, human behavior, pseudoscience, real science, just really whatever we're noodling on at any given time in order to determine why people are the way that they are. is Jamie Ryan in Los Angeles plotting her Six Flags, like, closed in the park. Did anyone else read the book The Beast as a Child, where they get locked in Kings Island? Maybe that's just Ohio and fodder. I don't know. Anyway, that's her in Los Angeles and doing that's, it, okay?
And that's Austin Williams fanning the flames of my misadventures in Chicago.
I'll always fan the flames, but like I'm out here fanning them from a distance. I'm such a rule follower that if you were trying to get me to do this, even as a 31-year-old adult, I would be like scared. I'd be like, are we going to get in trouble? I hate that I'm like this, but it is how I am like. You
and
know what I'm
in that moment when you were spiraling about that in this imagined scenario, I would say to you, if anyone asks us, we will say, we're pass holders. Do you need to see our passes? And if they say yes, and then they say, you can't be here right now, you just act confused and apologetic, and then it's fine.
See, you're so much better at being this kind of person than me. But you guys, this is what I do. I surround myself with rebels and rule breakers, because otherwise, like the stick that I assume I've whittled down to a twig, but is still lightly up my asshole. Yeah. I gotta be around the people who will break the rules, because I'm like, are we gonna be, is it okay? Are we sure? Like, this is what happens to academic brown nosers later in life. So if I could encourage you guys,
they make wands with their assholes. You're right.
Yeah, I fucking whittle this.
Whittle a rectal wand.
I don't know. What if I could whittle with my asshole?
Oh my God. What if? You would be like such a high paid porn star, or like equivalent of a sideshow performer. There would be docuseries, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. I'm sad.
I like want that to happen to me. So I mean, like, I don't, but like,
I think that the hemorrhoids would be really, really tough to manage.
Yeah.
I'll invest in Witch Hazel.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about the roids.
I know.
Them roids, they be plaguing us, you know? Ooh. You can't know. Them roids. Listen, we're not here to talk about hemorrhoids or me whittling with my asshole and my future career in pornography, or excuse me, the adult film industry, or I, you know, the Halloween theme park sneak-ins, although I hope we hear more on that later.
Yeah, I'll keep you posted. Maybe by Thanksgiving you'll get to hear how my Halloween went.
I can't wait. Truly. That said, you, dear listeners, you've seen the title of this episode. You know what we're talking about. We've been doing this a lot lately. Jamie doesn't know what
again,
we're talking about.
It's a mystery to one of the hosts.
Yeah, that has been a reoccurring theme. And I'm like, I guess it's cool. Like, I'm
it's not
into
like
it.
I needed to prepare, so it's fine.
All right, cool, tight. But I will say, I do want to start off just briefly before I, like, let you in exactly on what the topic is. The little anecdote.
Yes, please.
The beginning, if you will.
I would love
it. Okay, you ready?
Mm-hmm. Exposition.
So for over 20 years, Linda Bonanno, which I'm like, what a name.
Wow.
I could be saying it wrong. But she lived in fear. Maybe we are talking about whittling assholes. Okay, hold on. So she lived in fear that her irritable bowel syndrome, IBS, would suddenly interrupt her daily routine with frequent trips to the bathroom and unbearable cramping.
Absolutely.
Bonanno, now a 71-year-old medical assistant and hairdresser in Massachusetts, tried everything from drugs to dairy-free diets, and nothing worked. I thought you could empathize with
Absolutely.
Her.
Absolutely.
The
happy dairy
she's
will
here
get
with
you.
Us.
And just to, asterisk, she's got IBS, but I've got IBD. Riddly diddly, IBD.
I can't. Okay. So our girl Linda remembers a particularly tough period over 10 years ago when she was working on the factory floor of a medical device company for up to 10 hours a day, 6 days a week. I'm like, damn,
that's
Linda.
A long time for her bowels. Yep.
Yeah, that's a lot. And so when an IBS episode would strike, her coworkers would cover for her as she huddled in the corner, kneeled over in pain. I'm like, I don't like this for anyone involved.
Listen, I've served through colitis attacks, and it is that. Go on.
Dark, right? And so she wanted to go like dancing with friends at the local club on Sunday. And I'm like, okay, Linda, go off. She would, this sucks though. She would stop eating on Friday so there wouldn't be anything in her system to interrupt her plans.
Oh, there were times when I was like not eating breakfast before I would go to my serving shifts because I knew that I wouldn't be able to do them if I had anything in my body that could like cause a problem. Oh, Linda,
I don't like this.
We're kindred.
and I quote, Linda says, it was a horrible way to live.
It is.
Linda, Jamie, all of you.
I didn't mean to make this about me. Go on.
You can, though. I'm fine with it. Yeah. One day in 2009, she saw a TV ad looking for people with IBS to enroll in a study.
Oh.
She signed up and was thrilled when she was among about 80 people who were selected to take part in a first-of-its-kind clinical trial.
Okay.
But when she found out what kind of treatment she'd be receiving, Bonanno felt deflated.
Hmm.
A placebo pill.
Oh, okay.
The doctors told her there were no active ingredients in the pills, and the word placebo was clearly labeled on the bottle.
Maybe they
She felt like
her.
She'd gotten her hopes up for nothing.
Of course.
This sounds a little weird, right? We'll get into it. So 3 weeks later, after taking the pill twice daily, Bonanno was symptom-free.
Hmm.
She had never gone so long without an attack. She said, I didn't have a clue what was going on. I still don't.
Oh, still don't.
Mm. So that brings us to this point. The medical community has been aware of the placebo effect, what we will be discussing tonight.
Oh, excellent. Thank you. Light applause.
The phenomenon in which a non-therapeutic treatment, like a sham pill, improves a patient's physical condition. And
which
we've known about
knew?
This. The medical community has known about it for centuries. Okay.
I just am surprised that she knew and that that worked. Go on.
Oh, well, we will get into that because there's some special stuff about this trial. But I want to take a brief pause before we carry on with our sweet story and give note to, like, crediting my sources here.
Sure.
That most of this information, all of our story about Linda, to be continued momentarily, comes from a Time magazine article. You can find it online. It was also published in Time magazine in August of 2018. And the headline is, people are now taking placebo pills to deal with their health problems, and it's working.
Wow. Thanks, Linda B. Yeah.
So, just a little bit about placebos in general. But what is the placebo effect? Let's just take a brief pause on that, right? So a placebo is anything that seems to be, quote, real medical treatment, but isn't. Mm-hmm. So we often think of pills, but it could also be like a shot or some other type of, quote, fake treatment.
Sure.
What all placebos have in common is that they don't contain any active substance meant to affect health.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How are they usually used? So researchers use placebos during studies to help them understand what effect a new drug or some other treatment might have on a particular condition. So an example of this is like some people in a study would be given a new drug to lower cholesterol and other people would get the placebo and nobody would know who was enrolled in the study, whether they got the real treatment or the placebo. Oftentimes in these blind studies, the doctors are usually like also blind to the information. Mm-hmm. So they're treating everybody the same and all that good stuff. And then the researchers then compare the effects of the drug and the placebo on the people in the study. That way they can determine the effectiveness of the new drug and check for side effects. And I think that's the way most of us are used to hearing about placebos being used or like blind
like
drug
a
studies.
Control and like, group, basically.
Yeah. And you don't know which one you get and the doctors don't know because we're trying to do, you know, scientific method kind of motivated research
Absolutely.
Here to get good data. So with Linda's story, and we're going to dive a little deeper into that, she knew up front that it was a placebo.
Yeah, that's
so
very odd
different.
To me. Yes.
But I do just want to talk about what the placebo effect is specifically when people
please.
Say not just placebo, but placebo effect. So sometimes a person can have a response to a placebo and the response can be positive or negative. So, for instance, you know, a person's symptoms may improve. That would be like the positive side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or the person may experience what appear to be side effects from the treatment.
Oh, God.
And that's like kind of the negative one. But both of those responses are known as the placebo effect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There are some conditions in which a placebo can produce results even when people know they are taking a placebo.
Mm.
Studies have shown that placebos can have an effect on conditions such as depression, pain, sleep disorders, IBS, like our sweet friend Linda, and menopause.
Interesting.
And there was also one study out there that was for folks with asthma where they did like a placebo inhaler.
Oh.
And the people who used the placebo inhaler did no better on breathing tests than, you know, people who did nothing, right, that didn't have the inhaler. Mm-hmm. But when the researchers asked people's perception of how they felt, the placebo inhaler was reported as being as effective as medicine in providing relief.
Interesting. Well, and with an inhaler, too, as someone who periodically has to use an inhaler, there is like a ritual feeling about it. Like, it's different than taking a pill. Like the breathing in does like do something for your body, I feel like, even if it's just like a physical kind of marking of like, I'm doing this. I could see why that would work, I guess.
I think it could be argued that other people feel that way about pills.
Totally. Totally.
And other medical care. Still, we'll get into it.
Yeah. And briefly, I just have to mention, I don't know if we've ever talked about this on the pod before. We probably have. But I once triggered an entire classroom into a placebo effect reaction.
Well, that's true. I do feel like we have mentioned this before. And Jamie did trigger insanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I sold some caffeinated mints. And then a classroom full of people thought that their feet were ungodly. And she took off their shoes and socks. And the math teacher was not here for it. And
people thought they were like having like heart palpitations because Jamie gave people mints that had less caffeine in them than a Mountain Dew.
And I knew that. I knew that they were safe. And so it's ethically fine. Go on.
God bless. Okay. So how does the placebo effect work? Research on the placebo effect has focused on the relationship of the mind and body, which mm-hmm. seems kind of important, mm-hmm. right? One of the most common theories is that the placebo effect is due to a person's expectations. Mm. If a person expects a pill to do something, then it's possible that the body's own chemistry can cause similar effects to what a medication might have caused.
Mm-hmm.
So, an example of that is in a study where people were given a placebo and told it was a stimulant. After taking the pill, their pulse rate sped up and their blood pressure increased and their reaction speeds improved.
This is what I did for the class.
100%. And when people were given the exact same pill and told it was to help them get to sleep, they experienced the opposite effects.
Wow. This is like how people try to use bananas for everything.
100%. Well, bananas are good for some things. I mean, you got a Charlie horse, eat a banana.
They truly help. Yes, you're constipated. Eat a banana. Saying. You have diarrhea, eat a banana.
I think bananas, they're like the duct tape of home.
They are, maybe. And Linda B should probably stock up.
Okay, Linda B, let's go. So experts also say that there's a relationship between how strongly a person expects to have results and whether or not they occur.
Mm-hmm.
So the stronger the feeling, the more likely it is that a person will experience positive results. And there may be a profound effect due to the interaction between a patient and their healthcare provider.
Mm.
So on that note, I kind of want to jump back into Linda's story and tell you a little bit about her healthcare provider.
I would love to know.
So Ted Kaptchuk, a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School and one of the leading researchers on the placebo effect, wanted to take his research further. He was tired of letting people in his studies think that they were taking a real therapy and then watching what happened.
That is
a
bummer.
Instead, he wondered, what if he was honest? His Harvard colleagues told Kaptchuk he was crazy, that letting people in a clinical trial know they were taking a placebo would defeat the purpose. Nevertheless, in 2009, the university's teaching hospital, Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, launched the first open-label placebo, or so-called honest placebo, trial to date, starting with people who had IBS, including Bonanno.
Hmm. I also feel like, just brief asterisk.
Surprising.
I feel like doing this for like a bowel problem is like a really interesting choice. And it probably lends itself well to this project because I don't know. I just feel like gastrointestinal stuff is so linked to like your emotions and like how you, where your head's at. Like I
anxiety, stress.
I can think myself into like intestinal inflammation very quickly. Absolutely.
Totally. And I think, and we'll get into this more, but I feel like you're making a really important point. I think gastrointestinal stuff is definitely in there. But I also think a lot of other things are.
It's so like, many other things. I just have intimate knowledge of this particular problem. Yeah.
We all know that person who like mentions like maybe like having a cold near someone else and the person they're near is like that type of person who's like, well, I'm sick like 2 days later. And I'm like, boy, you did this. Okay.
Yes.
Like, you thought this up. You've made it happen. You manifested this illness.
100%.
So in this, like, honest placebo trial, nearly twice as many people in the trial who knowingly received placebo pills reported experiencing adequate symptom relief compared with the people who received no treatment.
Wow.
Not only that, but the men and women taking the placebo also doubled their rates of improvement to a point that was about equal to the effects of two IBS medications that were commonly used at the time.
And then we're like, so what the fuck's that one? Yeah.
Yeah, honestly. So I was entirely confused, said Cap Cook. I had hoped it would happen, but it defies common wisdom.
Wow.
So now Cap Cook, or Cap Chuck, maybe. I don't know. Well, we can't know. Yeah, these are some interesting last names.
Yeah.
But our boy.
What's his first name?
Ted.
Yeah.
Ted.
Ted C. And Linda B. I think we're fine.
Yeah. Ted K, actually. That's why it's hard. Oh. Ted K and Linda B. We're going for it. So our boy Ted, Cap Cook, Cap Chuck, and his team at the program in placebo studies and therapeutic encounter at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, which is at Harvard, have secured a $2.5 million grant from the National Institutes of Health to replicate that first IBS trial.
Yeah, that's fucking important.
So far, and at the time of the publication of this article, which is in 2018, researchers have treated 270 patients, and they are hoping to treat a total of 340 people with IBS via their ongoing clinical trial. Mm. It's unclear what underlies the placebo effect. Some experts argue that the human body subconsciously responds physically and psychologically to the ritual of treatment, which is what you mentioned.
Right, yeah.
In kind of like a Pavlovian, like Pavlov's dogs kind of way. While others argue it's the power of positive thinking.
Or some swirl of both, yeah.
Sure. For better or worse, entrepreneurs are beginning to pay attention, and you can buy placebo pills on Amazon now. I looked this up earlier today and was like, look at all of these options for like empty capsules, or they're like things called like honest placebo. There are things that are placebo pills that like say on them it's for like anxiety and like stress, but like they're also like notably like placebo pills, but they're like telling you that, but it's like they're placebo. It's like,
yeah,
it's like they're labeled in a way to like cater to what you want your placebo to do. I was like, this
makes me be like, is this why crystals work for some people?
Mm. I mean, it's an interesting thing when there's stuff that people are like, I really am experiencing something with this, and other people are like, well, we can't scientifically prove that. And I'm really here to say that I think a lot of shit is true that like probably defies the like scientific knowledge we currently have, mm-hmm. You know?
No, I agree.
So this is interesting, though. So not everyone agrees that honest placebos work. No surprise there, right? Because it shouldn't make sense. And yet, in today's medical environment, where the sense of being cared for can be lost behind even higher medical bills and less FaceTime with doctors, it can make all the sense in the world, according to this article. So, the placebo effect, which I have explained lightly for you, does have a long medical history. So, some of these fun notes. In 1807, President Thomas Jefferson wrote to a friend, "One of the most successful physicians I've ever known has assured me that he used more bread pills, drops of colored water, and powders of hickory ashes than of all other medicines put together."
Wow.
During World War II, an anesthesiologist named Henry K. Beecher observed that many wounded soldiers declined morphine to treat their pain, despite the fact that civilians with similar injuries would demand it.
Mm.
And so to Beecher, this suggested that living through trauma affected soldiers' perceptions of their pain and circumstances, and that a portion of people's ability to heal must come from their own psychological expectations.
Wow, that makes a ton of sense to me, though.
I fully agree. And following Beecher's insights, the placebo became an instrument in mainstream clinical practice in the advent of double-blind and randomized clinical trials like we were discussing, in which researchers begin comparing their drugs with fake medications to assess just how effective a given treatment truly was.
Mm. Mm.
So today, the placebo is well-recognized in modern medicine. And doctors at the Houston Veterans Affairs Medical Center have actually shown that sham surgeries, and this fucking fascinated me. So what's a sham surgery? It's like slicing people's knees open and sewing them back together without doing any actual work, like any treatment, provide the same improvements for people with osteoarthritis of the knee as real knee surgery.
Oh, my God. But again, that's a situation of like inflammation, like swelling kind of stuff, not like your knee is dislocated.
Totally. There's also a phenomenon, and I thought this was cool, too, that's known as the nocebo effect. And you're like,
come
placebo,
again?
Nocebo, which is when people's negative expectations about something make them feel worse.
Ugh.
So some experts believe the nocebo effect accounts for at least part of the growth in people reporting food sensitivities to gluten and dairy.
Well, I'm going to just zip my lips on that one, but heard that.
It doesn't mean that nobody is sensitive to gluten and dairy.
Absolutely
it just
not.
Might mean that more people think they are than are.
Totally.
Well, and also like having the sensitivity just because maybe you got there through nocebo doesn't mean it's not real.
You're right.
It's like when you you have anxiety and it's making you feel physically ill. Just because like your physical pain is caused by whatever like mental thing you're going through, it doesn't mean that you're not having physical pain. It just could be that like you've done this to yourself.
This sounds true. The vomit
mean,
is
but, like,
still real.
This has occurred psychologically is what I mean.
Yes. No, I'm with you.
So researchers are learning that placebo has nuance too. So, for instance, the effect appears to be stronger if people are told a medication is hard to get or expensive.
Ooh, exclusivity.
Uh-huh. Listen, humans are terrible. Color may also matter. I love this. With people responding better to blue pills as sedatives and white pills for pain.
Well, and it's like those are both like cold colors. And remember we talked about like you told me that cold is luxury.
Cold.
Yeah.
But I also think then it's like maybe sedatives are like in the past were typically blue. We've seen a lot of white pills for pain looking at you, Tylenol, aspirin,
Oxycontin.
Bayer. Yeah. Still, a lot remains unknown. And some people have a strong response to placebos, including the honest placebos, right?
Mm.
But others also experience no fucking impact at all.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the same happens with any treatment. Every medication, people are like, this helped me. And other people are like, this did nothing for me. So.
Well, then it's like, it's like, do you have to control? And I'm sure you're like maybe going to get into this. But like, is there a way then to like create control groups within the placebos? Because it almost feels like you're testing so many things now because the placebos are like doing their own thing. And so is the medication.
Well, the placebos aren't doing anything. It's like people's psyches.
But the ritual of taking them.
Sure. And I mean, I think that is what they're testing in the group of people, that everybody's getting an honest placebo and then you're seeing who's responding and who's not.
No, totally. In this study, yes. I just mean like in other studies across the board, like it seems like you'd have to have a group also that's like taking nothing at all, not even a placebo to really have a control group.
Like you'd have to be, I think that it might be hard to get people to sign up for clinical trials like that because a lot of it is like if people sign up for a clinical trial, a lot of times there's like an element of desperation with
absolutely.
Whatever you're faced with.
Yes.
And so then to be the person who gets nothing.
you have to be paid well. Yeah. Or you're like in a Tuskegee situation where it's like highly unethical and they don't tell you that like you're not receiving the real pill. Anyway, that's not for us to talk about tonight.
Oh, it's a whole nother episode. That's for sure. But we will get into some areas of how patient care affects people's response to things. And I do have some opinions myself about how it's not just taking the pill, but it's also, you know, people going in to see the doctor.
Listen, so, someone brings me like a cool cloth to put on my head when I don't feel well, and it is like a 180. So go on.
Listen. So since that first IBS study, our boy Ted and his co-authors have shown in other research that people taking honest placebos experienced more migraine relief than people not taking any treatment.
Hmm. Okay, that's good.
Other researchers have found that patients who are aware that they are taking placebos still see improvements in symptoms like cancer fatigue and seasonal allergies.
That's very odd.
So, in 2016, a study was published in a journal called Pain, which I'm like, shout out to a journal called Pain. but researchers, including our boy Ted, randomly assigned 83 people with chronic low back pain at a hospital in Lisbon to either continue taking their pain medication as usual or to start taking honest placebo pills with their typical treatment. Before the start of the study, the men and women filled out questionnaires about the intensity of their pain and how much disability it was causing them.
Okay.
After that, people treating their pain as usual continued to take their non-steroidal, like anti-inflammatory drugs, whatever they were already on, while people taking placebos were given bottles labeled placebo pills with instructions to take the pills twice a day. After 3 weeks, the people in the study rated their pain and disability levels again. And the researchers found that on average, the group taking painkillers reported a 9% reduction in usual pain, a 16% reduction in maximum pain, and no reduction in disability. However, the people knowingly taking the placebos experienced a 30% reduction in both usual and maximum pain and a 29% drop in disability.
This is unbelievable.
I know. Like, this is insane.
This is just like, everyone stop taking your medication and take these sugar pills. Wow.
I'm going to be honest. While I was doing this research, I was like on Amazon, like looking at placebo pills and being like, yeah, you can do this. And this is nuts. And like looking at the labels on things, I was like, what should I take a placebo for?
Right. Well, and then you can use it for anything. It's truly a cure-all.
Apparently. I don't know. But then I'm like, would it matter if it wasn't like prescribed to me and I was just buying them on Amazon? Does that feel like different?
I bet it matters person to person.
Probably. So our boy Ted does not fully understand what's going on, but he has some ideas.
Okay.
He says sometimes the body knows more than the mind.
Body does keep the score.
That's what they say. He says your body reacts in ways that go beyond the mind. So he kind of struggled to find adequate analogies, but he likened it to watching Romeo and Juliet when you know what's going to happen. If the performance is evocative enough, even though you know it's fake, you might get like a lump in your throat or like tear up.
Right. Okay. That makes sense to me. I'm seeing this.
That was kind of compelling.
That's
and interesting.
A really good analogy.
You know this isn't real and you know what's going to happen, but you still feel like
this is like when you and I used to play that Harry Potter video game on your parents' computer, and when the spider would lunge at the screen, we literally screamed all night in your parents' computer room.
I thought an early aughts graphic of a spider was going to jump through the screen and kill me.
Over and over.
I don't like spiders. Don't come for me. Okay. More important to Ted than understanding why honest placebos work is figuring out how to gain in like the scientific knowledge, basically, that he could translate into clinical practice. Because placebo has generally been denigrated in medicine, but Ted says, I always wanted to figure out ways to ethically harness it. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
So scientists already know that the very act of being treated, and this I think is interesting and important, and this is where I'm like, if I just bought these for myself, would it matter? But they already know the act of being treated is enough to improve some conditions. Mm. So a placebo effect may account for anywhere from 30 to 45% of response to antidepressants, for example. Mm. And a 2015 study found that the same people who responded well to placebo pills are also more likely to have better results when they take real antidepressants.
Oh, so, okay. More receptive all around.
Totally. But even if placebo or honest placebo can provide relief, placebos themselves rarely cure. And that is an important distinction.
Yeah, yeah.
It's unclear if the effects of a placebo can change the physiological processes that underlie a disease, mm-hmm. even if they can ease a disorder's symptoms. So to that point, like a placebo cannot shrink a cancerous tumor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or but we did insulin. Hear that it helped people who were having fatigue while having
cancer.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So still, altogether, these placebo treatments do appear to activate neurotransmitters in the brain that could play a role in symptom relief.
Wow. Okay, yeah.
So in Linda's case, after the initial three-week study ended in 2010, her IBS symptoms came back in full force for several years.
Oh, no.
I'm like, poor Linda, she's bent over in the factory.
All she needs is a fake pill.
Here's the thing. Since she had already participated in the first Harvard Honest Placebo Trial, she wasn't eligible to take part in one that's ongoing. Instead, our compassionate and favorite man, Ted, continues to treat her as a case study.
Oh, okay.
Now, every 6 weeks, our girl Linda drives 45 minutes for a checkup with Ted at his home clinic, where they discuss her condition and Ted gives her the anecdote she's been taking for the past year, a bottle of sugar pills.
Yep.
And she says, all I know is that it works and that's all I care about.
Why would she care about anything else? Yeah, no, that's great. Linda, I'm so happy for you. And maybe even like the act of driving there is helpful. Like I often feel that like just the feeling of like me taking care of something or like giving it attention like eases my stress about it for sure, which then like eases the whole situation, whether that's a physical illness or something else.
100%. And I think it's the act of like maybe like going to be seen by mm-hmm. a doctor, researcher, our boy Ted, and then also, like, feeling validated.
Exactly.
Like, this person is like, I believe you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the question remains of how exactly the lessons learned from placebo trials should be embraced. And there's a ton of disagreement, as you can assume. Western medicine, this is not good for big pharma, obviously.
This is the worst thing since marijuana for them. Yeah.
Honestly. So some critics argue that the concept of giving people placebo pills could eventually create a crutch that people will assume they need a pill for every ailment, and that's a valid point.
Well, but like if the pills are nothing,
I know,
does it matter? Go ahead.
I listen. Questions. Other scientists are skeptical of the honest placebo findings themselves, arguing that the results are exaggerated or prove only the power of suggestion.
Well, they definitely do that.
I mean, that's fair. Some critics claim that the doctors must imply to people in the trials that what they are taking will work, but Ted and his team insist that they don't. He says his team picks conditions that have responded to blind placebo trials in the past, like back pain and migraines. Mm-hmm. And they tell the participants that placebos have shown to affect those conditions in studies in which people don't know they are taking them. They say they don't know if a placebo treatment can work if people know about it, but that's what they're testing and that's what they're saying they convey to these patients.
Okay.
So,
yeah. But then, you know, we have Linda as a case study.
And then we have Linda as a case study, right?
And she knows.
She knows. So enter the chat, Alia Crum, saying placebo is not magic. She is a principal investigator at the Stanford Mind and Body Lab, who is also studying placebo. And she says, we view placebo effect as the product of your body's ability to heal,
okay,
which is activated by our mindsets and expectations to heal and shaped by medical ritual, branding of drugs, and the words doctors say.
Mm-hmm.
So Crum says honest placebo research is fascinating and important, but she doesn't see doctors prescribing placebo pills anytime soon.
Yeah.
Instead, she's interested in how doctors can get their patients into the right mindset for medical care, which I think is like a very interesting thing.
Sure. I mean, we're taking this concept and like navigating slightly away from the idea of a prescription. And so like that's cool.
Totally. So she goes on to say, we've been pumping billions of dollars into developing new drugs and treatments without much headway on the chronic disease crisis.
Mm-hmm.
What if we spend that same time, money, and effort on achieving a greater understanding of the patient's natural abilities to heal?
Yeah, I would love it.
In her research, Crum studies how adjusting factors in a patient's environment affect their treatment. She's found that how warm and competent a doctor is when interacting with a patient can affect how that person responds to therapy. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I would agree with this for my fucking self.
Agree, yes.
So in a March 2017 study, Crum followed 164 people who participated in an experiment in which a doctor induced a small allergic reaction on their arms through a histamine skin prick test. So mm-hmm. basically, they're doing like an allergy test, yeah. one of those like skin pricks.
Yeah.
All of the people developed a red swollen mark from the prick. But, and I love shit like this, the size was much smaller among people who thought their physician was highly competent and warm.
Oh my God.
Because of behaviors like making eye contact, calling the patient by name, you know, general like just kindness.
Wow.
It's
like you believe that they have good intentions. And so like they didn't maybe fuck you over quite so
much. And that they're like
so
doing
much.
Their job and that they care.
Yeah.
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 And so those also who received affirmation from the doctor that a cream for the reaction would lessen the symptoms, even though there was nothing in the cream.
Wow.
What the competent doctor said about the cream, either that it would make the rash worse or better, actually affected the physical appearance of the rash too.
Oh my God. I love this.
On the other hand, people in the study had the largest bumps when they received the same treatment but felt their doctor was cold in personality and didn't offer any assurances that the cream would help their reaction.
Of course.
Not only that, but what the less competent doctor said about how the cream would react with the rash made no difference at all on its appearance. So even if they thought the doctor sucked, but he was like, yeah, this cream will help, then it still didn't work because they were like, fuck this dude.
Right. Well, you don't like have trust in him. This also makes me think about like healers, like people who like claim
yes.
to be spiritual healers and stuff. It makes me be like, is there maybe a little bit more legitimacy, at least in like symptom relief, than maybe I've previously thought there could be if the person
and maybe
who's
even just somebody
it,
like validating.
Exactly.
You know?
Yes. Mm-hmm. If you think like I'm getting my migraines treated by this pastor and the Lord, and that could be enough.
According to Crum, doctors think it's good to have patients like you to get high rating scores. But what she's stressing is that it's actually important in making the treatment more effective, which like,
wow.
Damn.
Yeah. We should tip doctors then, I guess. We should let's have them make $2 an hour and live on tips.
Let's not give doctors more money. I don't know about that. I don't need more money in the healthcare industry.
I was saying that we would reduce their pay otherwise. Go on.
Oh, okay. Good. Get them on a server.
That's
kind
what I said.
Wage.
I said $2 an hour and then plus tips.
I'm in. Yeah. Okay.
Accountability.
So Ted, our boo who's helping out Linda with the IBS, he's less inclined to view the placebo effect as mindset alone, and he foresees a future in which a practitioner might send a person home with a bottle of placebo pills.
Okay.
Like Crum, though, he thinks doctor oversight is a crucial part of the puzzle. But before placebo researchers have had time to figure out the balance, entrepreneurs are already on the move.
Of course they are.
So now I got to tell you about how folks are putting this into play. We've got the entrepreneurs on the move. Like there are these placebo pills that are on, Amazon and I'm sure other places on the internet and out there that you can find. But I love this because this is like totally something that I just could see a lot of parents employing like a similar thing. So enter Jenny Danto. She's a therapist and a mother of five. And at the time of this article, she had kids who ranged between 11 and 17. And she created a parenting hack called Magic Feel Good, which you can buy online.
Oh, my God.
When her children were younger, it seemed every week one child or another was suffering from like a phantom pain or like a suspicious tummy ache right before school. And if she and her husband determined that the complaints weren't serious or perhaps even real, her husband would slip into the kitchen and stir up a mixture of orange juice, grape juice, and honey, and then bring it to their child in a medicine cup, calling it Magic Feel Good.
Oh my God, this is amazing.
And Jenny said, she goes, I think sometimes parents just give Tylenol. And she goes, it's not a judgment. It's a fact. We've all been there. So she's like very like, listen, y'all, like I have kids. I get it. Mm-hmm. But she realized that other parents could benefit from their strategy. And in 2014, she created her product, which was a blister pack of vitamin C enriched sugar pills for kids' mysterious aches and pains. And the pills come inside a package designed to look like a fantasy book with labeling that says the pill should be used, you know, for non-medical ailments. And that while at this time of the article, it hadn't really taken off, Danto thought there could be growing interest in the future. I did a little research and it seems like it hasn't taken off and it's fewer and farther between. And
that I don't is think too they bad. Own.
It is. But, and I don't think they own their original domain anymore, but aww. I did see it available on the Daddy Jeff's website. So sure. There you go. But I think there's a lot of merit to this. And Jenny went on to say that she said, I think people feel better when they're validated. And I really align with this.
Yeah.
When someone says they don't feel good, you're validating them by giving them something. And I was like, yeah, that's got to feel especially true when you're a kid. Mm-hmm. Like, come on.
Mm-hmm.
And she might be right about a missing piece in medicine. There's a reason that research in the past decade has focused on the impact of empathy in medical care, showing that it can improve patient satisfaction and outcomes while also easing doctor burnout. Win, win, win.
Mm-hmm.
So, most Americans feel that their providers are effective, but studies show that when patients have a less empathetic doctor, they're less likely to say that they're satisfied about their care or follow the medical advice, which I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
I don't want to listen to someone
it's
I don't
like. Trust, too, for sure, 100%. And this is interesting, and I think this is real, and I'm so unsurprised by this, but survey results at the time of the publishing of this, so in 2018, show that only 34% of Americans say that they have great confidence in the country's medical industry leaders, which is down from nearly 73% in 1966. And I'd just like to cite that this is before we politicized a pandemic. So I would imagine it's even less now.
I'm sure it is, absolutely.
Other research shows that Americans have less confidence in the healthcare system than people living in other developed countries. And I'm like,
absolutely. Yeah,
that totally checks out. Hundo P. So, and here's another person. Ewan Heiss, a self-described, this is my favorite, placebo activist and healthcare transformer. I'm like, go off. Also sells placebo pills online, but these are catering to adults. And I found these, and these are currently available for purchase, but his blue and white pills are called Zeebo, Z-E-E-B-O,
sure,
and contain no active ingredients. Heiss has been selling them since 2015 and says the company has sold thousands of bottles to consumers, healthcare providers, and clinical trial studying open-label placebo.
Wow.
Still, Heiss is keeping the company going with his own funds and is looking for sponsors to continue production. I don't know, stay tuned to Shark Tank or something. But he takes his own pills daily for things like pain and stress relief.
Hmm.
And each time he takes a placebo pill, he tries to focus on an intention and describe it out loud. For example, if he's taking it for back pain, he might say, I'm taking this pill to relieve my mind of the suffering from back pain.
You guys, if you're curious about getting into magic, this is a great way to start.
What's that?
If you're curious about getting into magic, this is a great way to start.
It does seem, I mean, it's like, it totally, you're right. It's like absolutely chaos magic.
A ritual, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Here's another one that's interesting, too. So now we're swinging over to a doctor of Eastern medicine, Dr. Jesse Hoover, and they are in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and they are a Zeebo customer and recently began offering the pills to some of his patients. Mm. So many of his clients feel they're they've exhausted like other options.
Sure.
And a lot of folks, because he's like an Eastern medicine doctor, have come to him for all sorts of, you know, therapies like acupuncture and Chinese herbal medicine.
But when Hoover they're over it with American healthcare.
100%. They're like, fuck this. So Hoover says that so far his patients are skeptical of placebo pills, but he thinks the pills could be another option in his toolkit.
Mm, maybe eventually.
Yeah. He says, in modern medicine, we discount the patient. Many people have had the experience of talking to a doctor for 5 minutes, and then the doctor turns to lab work. If a patient says they don't get night sweats, a doctor might write, patient denies night sweats, as if we can't trust that the patient realizes what they are experiencing.
Wow.
All of this sets us up to embrace something like placebos.
Mm.
And I'm like, that's some shit. I've definitely had experiences, particularly like an urgent care situation where somebody is like, that's not what's going on. And I'm like, people are like, you have a cold. And I'm like, I promise you, I have a sinus infection. I've had many of them in my life.
One time.
That's what's happening.
Absolutely.
Gatorade will not cure me.
It will not. Like, and I went to the doctor in high school because I knew that I had conjunctivitis because I would get pink eye all the damn time, which is gross.
Mm-hmm.
But I, my regular doctor was out of town. I went into the office and they were like, you can see this person instead. I spent 30 minutes trying to convince this man to give me the medication that I usually would take when I would get pink eye, and him telling me he thinks that I have allergies. So I left with a fucking Claritin prescription had pink eye for 2 more weeks and went back to the doctor and was like, you'll notice that this is still pink eye. So anyway, right. That was fucking irritating.
That's awful, dude.
It's just a lot of pink eye.
It just sucks. You did get pink eye a lot. That's true. The American Medical Association is wary of placebos, no surprise there to me. In its Code of Medical Ethics, the group says doctors can use placebos for diagnosis or treatment only if they have patient's cooperation, obtain patient's consent to receive a placebo, even if they don't know when they are receiving it, and if they avoid using placebo to, quote, simply mollify a difficult patient. So they're worried that, like, doctors would, like, find a patient difficult and just be like, here, take these tablets, and then, like, not give them anything. So, and I understand how, like, that could be a concern.
For sure. But it seems like the argument here is not so much, like, blindly take these tablets, ma'am, and they'll cure you, but rather, like,
right.
These are placebos. And so that's, like, a completely different, like, conversation without ethical problems, I feel like.
100%. And according to the AMA, giving a placebo for such reasons places the convenience of the physician above the welfare of the patient. And physicians can produce a placebo-like effect through the skillful use of reassurance and encouragement, thereby building respect and trust, promoting the patient-physician relationship, and improving health outcomes.
Okay. I mean, that,
which, again, sure. Goes back to, like, how we mentally respond to, like, genuine care.
Totally. Yeah.
So, like we alluded to, especially when we were talking about Hoover doing the Eastern medicine, probably with a lot of people who are like, man, everything Western has not cured me.
Mm-hmm.
Desperation is often common among the people participating in the honest placebo trials. And I'm like, yeah, of course. Because pre this article, if somebody's like, if you had something really wrong with you, like, what would it take for you to, like, sign up to take just a placebo that you knew was a placebo to help you? I'd be like,
I'm definitely not starting there. Yeah.
Right. So we've got a lot of desperate people, and the simple feeling of being taken seriously seems to go a long way.
Mm-hmm.
So our girl Linda said her IBS symptoms started soon after she got divorced 47 years ago, and she thinks her disorder is partly stress-related, which, to your earlier point,
super common for gastrointestinal stuff. Woman is too old to be working in a factory, and yes.
I love you, Linda. Take care of yourself, sister. She says her doctors, including Ted, tell her she can probably stop taking the placebo pills and that it's unlikely she would have any problems. But after several reoccurrences, she said she's too scared to.
Oh.
But she goes on to say, I am the kind of person that listens to professionals. And if they tell me to take this pill and that it's going to work, I believe them.
Okay.
It's the combination of the mind over matter and the doctor's care.
And
something
doctor
switches
in
your mind when you're desperate.
Yeah. Wow. She was, ready to believe.
Totally. And response to any treatment, obviously complex. And some people might be more responsive to the intention of treatment and may even do better if therapies tap into their like natural resiliency through, again, this like quality doctor-patient relationships mm-hmm. or better treatments. Mm-hmm. But Ted says, I've had patients tell me that if I told them to put on a pink tutu and dance because I thought it would help, they would do it. Yeah. They know they're doing something totally ludicrous, but if they didn't have hope, they wouldn't get out of bed. So both Ted and our homie Aaliyah or Aaliyah Crum over at Harvard agree that there are ways doctor-patient relationships could evolve to take advantage of some of the lessons from honest placebo trials, but that it is easier said than done in our current healthcare system. Time-crunched doctors don't necessarily have incentives to go the extra mile.
It's not set up that way, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's easy to bill for a medication or surgery, says Crum. It's harder. 100%. It's harder to qualify and give someone credit for the time and effort and attention and skill it takes to create relationships that are healing.
Mm-hmm. And you're almost kind of, it would be beautiful if this could happen, but like, it sounds like kind of blending like a therapist with a medical doctor, where totally. You have someone who's treating like way more holistically.
It's just the whole person and yeah, understanding exactly. that like, you know, our psyche and things that are happening in between our ears affect how we physically feel, which I think pretty much every doctor would agree with.
Yeah, I would think. But, you know,
it doesn't
you could
mean they're
meet
like
my
incentivized
old GI.
To treat it. But
yeah, no, my old GI did not believe that my anxiety was related to my gastrointestinal distress. And that was
that
one of the most
stupid.
Frustrating things. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was also nearly 80 years old. So there's that.
Okay. Yeah. I mean,
just an older school of thought. Yeah.
Totally an older school of thought. Crum and a colleague are working with Stanford Primary Care to roll out a curriculum called Medicine Plus, which in medical terms, basically on teams, including everyone from receptionists to physicians, learn how to create an environment that is most conducive for healing.
Hey,
the strategies focus on leveraging.
Finally.
Right. 100%. The strategies focus on leveraging patients' mindsets, but build on the power of the placebo with the ultimate goal of helping medical practitioners harness the same forces that contribute to placebo effects alongside active medications and treatments.
Wow.
Ideally, one day these types of lessons should be incorporated into care much earlier
Indeed.
When health providers are in medical school, according to Crum. And I'm like, no shit.
Just let people have a nice experience. Coming to the fucking hospital.
100%. Because I know that, like, I don't know. I feel like people who are into the prestige of careers would be offended by this. But if you're a doctor or a nurse, you're in the service industry.
You absolutely are. You absolutely are. Yes.
And even a doctor's best bedside manner is not enough to cure someone of disease, but the new science of placebo begs the powers that be to pay attention to the small nuances of caregiving that matter. Placebo is complex, but it's not wizardry. Taking it seriously, even if it's unexplainable, may be worth it. Crum says, it shouldn't come as a shock to us anymore that our minds affect our body. Why are we not asking what we're going to do about it?
Why? Why are we not?
Dun, dun, dun.
Exactly.
So with all of this said, does this make you like more open to, I don't know, like taking a placebo yourself? Like, would you ever do that?
No. Not like a placebo pill. It makes me feel like validated in like kind of chaos magic-y stuff. Like,
okay.
Or just kind of like, not willing myself to be like better if I have a head cold, but maybe also that. I think that like this has made me think a lot about how the healthcare system really is barred from changing in a way that would be toward like holistic care, probably.
Totally.
And how unfortunate that is, because this is really making me feel like that's every bit as important as like what's actually going on. And so to that, it's making me like a little bit more open to crystals, like which I mentioned earlier, because I do think
I love that the thought of like how we were doing placebos and stuff in medical care has made you be like, now I'm just more open to witchcraft.
Well, I'm like, if we can do something that doesn't actually have like a physiological mechanism that will do something in my body, taking a serotonin reuptake inhibitor, like that does something inside of you.
Yeah.
Why is taking a sugar pill different than like holding pyrite if I believe that they're going to do the same thing? So in that way, I'm open to more woo-woo stuff because of this conversation, I think.
I kind of really like that like the takeaway is like, you know what? It's just this mind over matter thing.
I think I would think about the pills as like too fake. I would be like accidentally focusing on that they weren't doing anything. Something about it being a pill just doesn't work for me.
I mean, that's real. And that's some of it is, I guess, like figuring out what shit like makes you feel good. But I will say it does make me think even more just about I don't know that I believe I'm going to like just like mentally will myself out of germs if I have like a cold or an infection or a virus or something. But it does make me think that like I can prevent myself from hyping it into being worse.
Totally. You know,
and I think that that's totally something we can do with like stress or just whatever our mindset is about something, that I can be like, you know what? If I just go into things with being like, I'll just kind of like try and take it easy and I'll be fine.
Listen, marijuana relaxes the body. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Totally. 100%.
Wow.
I don't know. I really liked reading about this. At one point, like in the middle of the article, I was like, should I have placebo pills? What would I want them
for?
Maybe
you should.
And then I was like,
go ahead.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I would like.
Would you do something else? Like my grandma used to put magnets in her bra.
I loved that she did that.
I don't know what that was supposed to do. It was supposed to do something that she believed in. Yeah.
It was something that she believed, and I don't know what it was supposed to do.
Nope. It was like pulling something out of her nipples. I don't know. There were like toxins. I don't know.
Guys,
heavy metals,
know.
Maybe, coming out the nips.
We got questions.
Yeah.
We got questions. I don't think that if I just like bought some pills on the internet and took them that I would like have a real feeling with that, but it made me think like, I bet if I were in a situation that was like involved in the care I was given,
yeah,
like I do feel like the prescribing of them seems like it would be something that would be important for me. And if I was involved in somebody wanting to like try that for something that was ailing me,
mm-hmm.
I would be open to it based on what I read. But I don't think me just being like, let me just get some shit on the internet would make me feel like healed, you know?
Right. No, and I think just like personality wise, earlier when we were talking and I said that I think for some people, maybe more than others, the element of the care and the feeling of the validation is probably the most important part. And I would guess just from knowing you that that would be like extremely important in you having a positive response.
Well, totally.
I think like I could probably more likely take some bullshit off the internet without a person.
I actually think that's true.
Yeah.
But I think about that in times that I've had like doctor patient care and that I've felt like really dismissed or like people didn't believe me,
mm-hmm.
versus times that like when I was like clinically, this is what I'm experiencing. And people were like, okay, that's what you're experiencing. So that's what you're experiencing. That's, we consider that to be a true experience, that like, that just feels so different. Cause I remember having like,
then it feels like they're treating the right thing. Not like that they disbelieve you and they're throwing some medicine at it.
Well, 100%. I remember when I was going through chemo, I was on like some medication that was like not part of chemo, but like to treat other stuff going on. And I was like, I feel like this is affecting me this way and I don't feel good. And I was like, but I don't even know if that's a thing that could like be a result of this. Mm-hmm. And my NP was like, she goes, if that's what you're saying is happening, it's happening. And I was like, oh, I don't think I'd ever had anyone in a medical profession ever say that to me. They were like, if that's what you think is happening to you, then it's happening to you.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, okay, like, cool. Yeah. Like, thank you.
That's incredible. Yeah.
But I never thought long and hard that those interactions probably actually like
made me like. It's like 50% of the treatment.
Like, yeah, like get better quicker, right. Or that like helped the medicine work for me mentally, especially if it's like treating something that was symptomatic. And I'm like, damn, that is
really wild. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't know. Any other feelings, thoughts on like patient care and placebo in general? Or your crystal juju now that you feel more supported in? I don't know. I like that you want to apply to something totally different. Like, I like that a lot, actually.
Well, I just, and maybe this is why I'm wanting to like apply it to crystals immediately. But the whole time that we've been talking about this, I just keep thinking about my grandma, who has always been like super into like holistic, like alternative medicine.
She's very healthy.
She's very, very healthy, and she's pretty old and like extremely active.
Yeah.
And she has just really thrown some money and some time at some woo-woo bullshit. And some of it has been real.
That's true.
And some of it, I think lately, like she's getting a little bit taken advantage of online, perhaps by some bootleg websites that she can't like have media literacy about. But regardless,
I hate it when that happens.
It's making me wonder about like all the things that I made fun of her for, like all of the charcoal cleanses and the magnets in the bra and like the garlic on certain
or the time
parts.
She would like at dinner like pull out like or breakfast pull out like 30 vitamins to the table.
You mean every
and
day,
I remember
twice
this
a
so
day?
Distinctly. I remember this so distinctly. You were like, I think we were both like kind of laughing at her. And she goes, you girls just wait until you're my age and you have to take these. And you looked at her and went, Mimi, those are vitamins. It's your choice.
Yeah. She doesn't take any medications. Just exclusively vitamins. Absolutely by choice.
Just a shit ton of supplements. She's out here doing it, y'all. Yeah,
she is. But no, it's made me wonder if she would be, and she probably would be, like less healthy now if she had not done all of that stuff that was maybe fake anyway, you know?
It did make me think that I had a period of time, maybe a couple years ago at this point, that I was like really drinking a lot of adaptogens.
Yeah, you were.
A lot of powdered mushrooms and ashwagandha and like all sorts of shit. And it makes me think that I want to do that again. Because I was like, I like the way
if
it made me feel.
It, I
feel
it.
Relaxed. Yeah, I believed it.
Yeah. Wow.
It makes me want to get back into the ritual because I did feel like it was a good thing for me. And something about like drinking roots made me feel like, quote, healthier. I don't know why, guys. I'm not saying that's true.
No.
That's the most LA thing I've said as the Midwesterner on this show. So.
That's true. Yeah. And I do not drink anything like that. I was just trying to think what I should get into to improve my health in a fake way because I'd love to.
Maybe whatever you believe in. Maybe that's
well,
the
what
whole
is
point
that?
Of placebo.
Yeah. You have to believe in something.
Something. Well, on that note, in true why are you like this fashion, should we pivot into a verbal game?
We should. Cue the vibraphone.
Cue the vibraphone. So I'd like to offer you a quick would you rather.
Yes, please.
Okay. So we've got, you're going to have like the same general practitioner in these fictitious scenarios just for life.
Okay.
Would you rather have an incredibly compassionate doctor, but the only stuff they throw out are like placebos or like kind of like home remedies?
Sure, yeah. I have a therapist, basically.
Okay. Yeah, basically, yeah. Or a doctor who was like pretty rude, never made eye contact, probably didn't even like all the way seem like they knew your name, like had a rude and difficult like front of house or like office staff.
Mm-hmm.
But they would prescribe like the top of the line, most like innovative meds, which I do just want to say the caveat, because like anything, these could work or not for you.
Right, right. And I have like a lot of feelings just about the pharmaceutical industry that would really I don't know. I just have a lot of feelings about medicine. And I've been like prescribed a lot of medications that didn't work or made me really sick. And I was told to keep taking them. And so that's really not an experience that I want to keep having. However, it's hard because I'm like, but that's for my whole life. And like when I get older, if I start to have like severe illnesses, like if I get like type 2 diabetes when I'm older, like I don't really want someone prescribing a placebo for that. And so I think that I would unfortunately choose the rude doctor and I would probably not always take the medication he gives me. I would just like use my best judgment and seek that kind of holistic shit elsewhere. Like maybe I could treat myself with crystals a little bit. But I just worry about older age and I can't believe I'm answering like this because I don't even like go to the doctor at all. And I don't like or trust doctors, but I am afraid of being old and not having, I don't want to use the word legitimate, but I guess not having like legitimate healthcare.
Or maybe having just even feeling like your options are limited because you feel like you could get like compassion somewhere else and just
yes,
like-
I could figure out how to have that somewhere else, I think. And like, so for example, like when I have a colitis flare, I have to have a steroid. And if I don't have a steroid, it sometimes will not get better and I'll like be in the hospital. But then if I also couldn't be treated in the hospital, I'm like gonna lose part of my body. So
right. There's a part of me that like wants to pick the compassionate, nice person because it sounds better. But then there's another part of me that's like, Austin, you had cancer 8 years ago. And right. How would that have gone?
Right. There's a few things that both of us need like some heavy duty medications for.
Right. If I know it's complicated, right? But it does. I guess I do feel very just like cognizant and even more thoughtful about how finding a doctor I like actually jive with is a really important part of the equation.
I'll
and
prioritize
like, not
it
just
more
like
after
for
this.
Like me being happier to go there, but like that
for
it
working.
Actually might improve my health.
Totally.
Which I'm like, that's not something I thought about before. That I'm like, oh, if I find my doctor kind, that actually might make me healthier.
Right, like 30% or something based on that study. I'm reapplying
so
data.
So fucking insane, dude.
Yeah.
Like, maybe that's a takeaway is like, listen, dear listeners, if any of you are going to a doctor that you like don't jive with, don't keep going.
Nah, you can move right on.
That's right.
Let them use someone else as an ATM. You feel me?
Well, that seems like it's for the best. On that note, dear listeners, if you've got a wild placebo story, something else that you've decided you would like to do like us, like I'm going to drink more powdered mushrooms and Jamie's going to play with crystals now because we've heard medical research make us think we can believe in anything. I don't know. What do you want to believe in? It's fine. As always, you can find us on the internet via email at whyyoulikethispod@gmail.com, on Instagram at whyyoulikethispod, and on Twitter at WAYLTTweets. Good morning, good night, good evening, good day. We will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.